The Bleed Smart Sportscast is brought to you by SunMaxBatteries.com, the go-to website for all your battery needs. SunMaxBatteries carries a full line of super heavy-duty, ultra-alkaline lithium and button cell batteries. SunMaxBatteries compares in quality to well-known national brands, and the best part, SunMaxBatteries are priced much lower than their competitors. Flashlights, remote controls, gaming controls, headphones, digital cameras, hearing aids, smoke alarms, whatever device you need a battery for, SunMax has the best batteries at the best price for your device. You can order a 24-pack of AA or AAA heavy-duty batteries for only $5.99, or a 24-pack of ultra-alkaline, ideal for all kinds of gaming and high-tech devices, at just $12.99. Order today and use coupon code BOSTON at checkout. That's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save 20% off your entire order. 20% off those already low prices. Once again, that's coupon code BOSTON, all uppercase, at checkout, and save big today. SunMaxBatteries.com, CellMaxBatteries.com, the official sponsor of the Wicked Smart Sports Guys. All right, welcome in everybody to another episode on the Guy Boston Sports YouTube channel. We're doing another live podcast, live streaming from the Wicked Smart Sports Guys, streaming onto the Guy Boston Sports YouTube. And the Patriots season, Colin, we needed to do it. The Patriots season is literally 4 days away. NFL kickoff is pretty much, by the time some people are listening to this, it's going to be 24 hours away. We're about, 28 hours away, roughly, from the kickoff of the NFL season. Buccaneers, Cowboys, so much stuff to get into. Colin, I mean, thanks for coming on. Thanks for making the time to hop on the stream.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I like that we've gotten a little bit of a habit here over the past few seasons of doing this before the season gets going. I don't know if things went as well as we thought or maybe hoped they would last year, so hopefully a little more optimism heading into this season.
Well, guys, this is pretty much going to be the setup for this one. Drop your questions in the chat. We'll answer your questions after we get through what we're going to do, which I'll explain in a second. But if you drop your questions in the chat, we'll get to all of them in the end. So throughout the show, don't be afraid to just drop them in there. We will get to them eventually. But the way we're going to start things out is we're going to do our annual tradition, something Colin and I have done for, I think you and I have done it for 2 years now. I think I've done it for 3 years straight before that, but this is going to be our third year doing it. The five most important Patriots. Do I have that right? This is our third year, right, doing this?
Yeah.
That's crazy. Time flies. I can't believe I've actually known you for even that long. That
is yeah, time flies.
But yeah, this is our third year with doing the Patriots top five most important players. As always, some ground rules. I think there's only really one ground rule. We can't pick the quarterback. And that was true when they had Tom Brady. That was true last year when they didn't have Tom Brady. And now it's true when they have a rookie in there. So no matter what, we've had three very different situations, which you could argue would make it less likely to keep that rule. But pretty much every year, no matter what NFL team you are, you're going to say the quarterback's pretty important. So we make that rule. We're not going to do the quarterback on the list anywhere. It's a given. He's number one.
Yeah, and I would say, especially this year, it's a given that he is at the top of the list for the Patriots in Mac Jones. But, I mean, we'll see what happens. I think it's a quarterback-driven league in general, so you need good quarterback play to succeed as a team. So, obviously, these other guys are going to be really important, but keep in mind that we're not forgetting how important, you know, the guy leading the ship at the quarterback position is.
So, we'll start with number one on our list on both of our – or no, we'll start with number five on our list and count down 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. We'll go back and forth. We'll each start with our number five. Colin, I think I'll let you start. Why don't you give your number five first?
I'm going to start with J.C. Jackson. He's a guy right now that his future is a little bit uncertain beyond this year. And that's okay. We're worried about this season right now. And if you want to talk about uncertain futures, you've got to look at Stephon Gilmore. And right now, regardless of what's going to happen with the contract situation, we know set in stone that he's out for 6 weeks at least on the PUP list. So I think that thrusts J.C. Jackson into even more of an important spot. And obviously we've seen J.C. Jackson have to play without Gilmore on the field with Gilmore suffering the injury there last year. I think J.C. Jackson is what we need him to be already. I think this importance more so lies on, you know, first of all, the best ability is availability. And he's the guy right now who we got. He's going to be our number one cornerback taking on those number one receivers. So I think it'll be important for him to continue the positive trajectory of his career, whether it be the crazy interception numbers that he seemed to run into every season or just, locking down a top receiver on the other side. I'm going to go with J.C. Jackson, and maybe he gets less important if Gilmore comes back week six and the contract situation is solved. But that's a lot of ifs at this current moment.
That's a good one. I'll give you Stacey Jackson. It was someone I briefly thought about, but I didn't quite want to go with JC because I have someone else that might play the same position as JC that I'm going to mention later. I feel like that might be giving too much away. But JC Jackson is certainly someone, as you mentioned, contract year. They put that tag on him, so the tender, whatever. What was the exact tag? I forget the name of it now.
I believe he just signed the restricted free agent tender.
Right, the restricted free agent tender, of course. Right. Yeah, so he's, you know, I thought that we were going to get into more of like a contract squabble over that.
Right, me too. Right,
I thought he was going to be upset about that. He deserved to get paid after a great season with a lot of interceptions, but that doesn't happen. It's been pretty much all things quiet on the JC Jackson front. So that was very surprising.
Right.
But the idea that he's important is of course true, especially that you're not going to have Stephon Gilmore for the first 6 weeks. So I think he was someone I considered, but I didn't quite want to go there because I kind of just, as important as I think he is, it's just been so we've heard just nothing out of there that I just trust that he's going to be as good as he was last season. I don't know that he's going to, you know, have that many interceptions again, but I kind of trust him to be there. I don't see a lot of a big range of where he could perform.
That's fair.
We've seen, even since he came in as an undrafted rookie, he's been pretty consistent. I have to give that credit there. So it's not something I'm necessarily worried about. But transitioning into a role as a number one corner, it's a different story. So if that's gonna be his role for who knows how long, who knows when Stephon Gilmore comes back, that's gonna be something to monitor. I'll give you my number five now, and I just wanted to have my number five is, I thought of four pretty quickly. And my number five, I was thinking, what do I have in my number five? And I wanted to pick someone I just kind of wanted to talk about. And I do think it's going to be important, but might not be someone that jumps off the page is important. So I picked Christian Barrymore. And I did this because we talk about the Patriots drafts in recent years and how they've missed on so many players. And Mac Jones has been pushed to the forefront in this regard, because it's the quarterback. It's Mac Jones. He could be your franchise quarterback. He's just come and he's performed amazingly. But Christian Barrymore is a guy that has a lot of talent, could have been a first-round pick. Surprising he wasn't a first-round pick. And you really still, you know, your challenges with young players, it goes beyond just one pick. One, you know, if it's Mac Jones, great, that's fine. But you need other players throughout the entirety of your team, other youth to be injected there. And Christian Barrymore has a great opportunity to be a wildly successful pick. And we talked about that replacement in the middle for Will Fork that has been, it's, you know, you seemingly haven't been able to find it. Lawrence Guy's done pretty well there, but they've been getting gashed with the run. Last year, they got gashed with the run. The year before, it was a bit of a problem. So that's something, like when they played the Ravens, remember 2 years ago, like they just couldn't hang. And even the Browns, who they beat, were really giving it to them in the run game. So that is definitely a problem, and Barrymore could be someone that fixes that. So the idea that he could be a guy that comes along and is part of, with Mac Jones, that push to get more youth on the team and rejuvenate the team and get back to having good drafts, that is very, very important. And he, with the fact that he's a rookie, he could end up being a staple of this defense for years to come. So for those reasons, I have Christian Barrymore number five.
Yeah, one word comes to mind when I think of Christian Barrymore and what I remember of seeing him play at Alabama. It's just motor. Like, he's just one of those motor guys. He's disruptive. He's in on every play, or at least every run play. So, yeah, to get a little bit of an injection of youth there on the defensive line is certainly very helpful. I mean, Lawrence Guy has been pretty much rock solid for us, but he's not getting any younger. Obviously, they brought in Godshaw too, but I think there's a huge opportunity for a guy who, like you said, I think a lot of people had him penciled into the first round, for him to slot into, you know, maybe first round snaps, like potentially have a starting amount of snaps on the defense. Obviously, we know the Patriots, it's hard to name who the starters are in the front seven because they're playing a rotation almost at all times. But I think he'll get a lot of burn out there. And I think, you know, there's a lot of potential there. So that, right, is a big interpretation of important, right? Like, this guy can be important now and be important down the road. So I certainly like your pick of Christian Barrymore there at number five. I'm interested to see where you go the rest of the way, though.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I like all my picks. We've got all these four guys jumped immediately to mind. And I'm cheating a little bit. Don't worry. I'm not saying Mac Jones is not the guy, but I'm cheating a little bit on my list. I'll give you, you can go number four though. Who's your number four guy?
All right. So for number four, I was deliberating over this one, and it comes down to kind of the different interpretations of important. Right. And, you know, I don't want to pick the five best players on the team. And I kind of did that with JC Jackson. And I'm not going to do that all the way through my top five. But at number four, I have to take Matt Judon just because I think he literally is that much of an impact player. I mean, you saw a defense last year that just needed a lift. Obviously, there were some guys who opted out and, you know, they spent a lot of money this offseason. But Matt Judon is on, to me, a different level. Like, I would make an argument that there's a chance Matt Judon is the best, just like based on where he stands, like at his position or overall talent, that he might be the best player on our team this season. So I find that important. You know, like I said, there's a lot of interpretations. I'm going to go in a couple different directions after this, but I'm overwhelmingly excited for Matt Judon to be a Patriot. He feels like the perfect Patriot player. So much versatility. They're going to use him all over the place. He's going to get sacks. He's going to get tackles. So, yeah, I think the importance just comes from the elite skill level. And, you know, you get a guy like that in free agency, it's not something we're used to. So, well, that to me, it kind of all wraps together. The fact that they addressed the need on the defense, they got a top flight guy, and he's somebody that I don't think we've really been able to go get or had the, you know, the salary cap space to go get in the past. So I think it's really important to see if this guy can actually make the impact that on paper he's supposed to, and all the numbers that he put up in Baltimore would tell you that he's going to, because we can't have another Adalius Thomas, whatever. Like, people are still talking about those. So we can't have, you know, we can't have more of that. That was our A-list guy that we got. So I think it's important for him to deliver every single dollar that we spent on him.
I agree. They spent obviously a lot of money on Judon this offseason, and that's something they rarely do. So the fact that they went out there and decided that Judon was worth that money and worth, you know, going out there and spending all that money on, that's something that they, you know, they don't do a lot. And obviously they spent a lot of money on a lot of guys that out in free agency this year. So the idea that, you know, he's going to be a big role on the team, I totally agree with that. And I'll, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about that more in the future. But I want to talk about my number four, which is Damian Harris. And the reason that I have Damian Harris number four is because the Patriots are going to be a running team this year. They, you know, I don't think that's going to be any secret. They have, you know, as good as their wide receivers have gotten a little better, but I still don't totally trust Nelson Agholor and Kendrick Bourne and all those guys out there. That's still a below average group in my mind and in the league at large. And their tight ends could be really good. I think that's going to be a special group in the passing game. But for the most part, I think with the offensive line they have and the running back they have, it's mostly going to be that type of team. Even though they don't have Cam Newton anymore, who, you know, a lot of people related Cam Newton to the run game, that they're going to be a running team with Cam Newton and a passing team with Mac Jones. I don't think that's true. I think no matter what, they're going to be a running football team. And I think the idea for them is going to be to make Damian Harris their feature back. Because when you look at their other backs, they have Ramondre Stevenson, who's already dealing with a thumb injury and is a rookie, who they just don't play a lot. They're playing Mac Jones, so maybe that will change. But I'll believe it when I see it at the running back position. They have James White, who's your pass-catching back, and J.J. Taylor, who is, you know, not really the ground-and-pound style back. He's more elusive, too. Might see some time in the passing game as well. Of course, a lot of people liken him to Deion Lewis. So, to me, Damian Harris is the guy, and I think he started to break out last season. He didn't quite totally do it. I mean, I had a tweet ready, and I'm giving this away to some people right now. I still have it saved in my drafts because I'm waiting for it to happen. I had a tweet ready that said Damian Harris was going to be the first Patriots running back with 100-yard rushing games in a season since Corey Dillon. And I really honestly believe that Harris has the potential to be the Patriots' best running back since they had Corey Dillon. I really think he's could be that type of runner. And I think he proved it by what he started to do last season, and I'm hoping he furthers it this year. Because they really, you know, people talk about the offense going in the passing game and Mac Jones getting the offense rolling and him bringing it back to life after it was so dead last season. It could be, there's a heavy amount of that weight, not over 50% or anything like that, but a heavy amount of that weight falls on Damian Harris's shoulders as well. And I know Corey Dillon is a lofty comparison, and it's a big statement to say, but I really think that Damian Harris can be Corey Dillon-like for the Patriots.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to lie. This is a guy who's going to be, it was going to be on my list, probably my next pick on my list. I could not agree more with a lot of things that you said, but one thing in particular is that it does not matter whether it was Mac Jones or Cam Newton or whoever's playing quarterback. The Patriots are a running team. Like at this point, that's what they're going to be. And obviously the acquisitions this offseason, you know, you get a couple tight ends who might be able to help out in the passing game, and the receivers are better. I won't call them necessarily a good receiving core, but they're better. So yeah, it's so important for Damian Harris. And look, Damian Harris showed almost everything we needed to see from the aspect of the type of runner he is and whether he translates as a legit three down back in the NFL. And I think he showed that. The one thing that worried me with Damian Harris, and I think this comes back to his importance this year, is he struggled a little bit inside the red zone to score touchdowns. Only had two touchdowns last season. Obviously Cam Newton scored a lot of our touchdowns inside the, you know, 5 yard line. So maybe that's not a knock on Damian Harris. Maybe the Patriots didn't necessarily think Damian wasn't good enough to get it done. They just thought Cam was better off in that role. But it's a spot we need to see him thrive in. I think the hot topic right now is that, oh, Stevenson can kind of be our LeGarrette Blount and get us in the end zone. But ideally, Damian Harris can get you down the field and get you into the end zone. So, I think it's really important. And, you know, there's no Rex Burkhead anymore. It feels like a real defined RB1. No Sony Michel to muddy the waters. Like, it's really Damian Harris's job, and we'll see if he runs with it.
Absolutely. All right, Colin. Was Damian Harris on your list, by the way? Was he on there?
Yeah. I was seesawing between having him as my two or three. But I have a couple other names. I have a good replacement. As soon as you said it, I had a good replacement.
No. I want to keep the list. I want to keep the list true to what they are. So where was Harris on your list?
I'll say three.
Okay. All right. That's fair. I will say that. I hesitate. Well, I'll just leave it. There's a secret that I'll get into. I guess if he was your three, I'll just go with my three. I don't know if it's going to be on your list too. If it is, sorry, Paul. I'm still just going to have to imagine it is. But my number three, and this is where I cheated a little bit. I just said a tight end. I have a tight end on there. And I don't care who it is. It's one of the guys. Because as I just mentioned, the tight ends are going to be integral to this passing game. I think they're far superior to the wide receivers. They might have the best tight end group in the league. They really might. I mean, it's the Buccaneers are up there with, you know, having Gronk and O.J. Howard and Cameron Brayton, all those guys. That's great. And the Browns are up there. I really like what the Browns have at tight end with, you know, Hooper and Njoku, and even Bryant showed a lot last season and seemed really good at times. But the Patriots have two guys that I look at as, like, potential top 5-6 tight ends in the league. Like, that's what you're talking about with these two guys. Sure. So I think that they are going to be integral to the offense, to the passing game. And I don't know that you need both of them to be top six guys to have a successful offense. I think if both of them are top six guys, you're talking about having a really dangerous unit. If just one of those guys can be elite, if just one of them, or they can interchange, if one guy's you know, playing like the best tight end in the league one game, while the other guy's playing like the best tight end in the league the other game, that's great too.
Right.
But you just need one of them really to be special. And as long as that happens, their offense is going to be really good.
Yeah, no, I'm for sure with you. And I keep kind of like going back and forth in my head on who I think is necessarily maybe more important or who's the better option. Like, but I like the fact that they bring some different things to the table. They're both going to for sure help out in the red zone, number one. And number two, like with Jonnu Smith, I think there's so many options. There's so many creative things you can do. I mean, Bill Belichick doesn't just call somebody the best run after the catch tight end in the league, you know, if he doesn't mean it. And obviously he put his money where his mouth was. That's why he went out and signed the guy literally, what, 30 seconds into free agency. So I think one of these, I kind of actually agree with what you said in the fact that it'll be almost kind of back and forth. Like you'll have Jonnu Smith have some huge weeks. Like obviously we're not getting into fantasy right now, but it's kind of like if you think about it in that aspect, like you will not know which one is going to go, you know, go out there and have the 8 catches and 2 touchdowns or whatever it may be. So I think that'll be a little bit tough to place your finger on. So I kind of like that you just went with a tight end approach. I think that plays well. Because literally all they need is one of them to be effective at all times, whether it's
and also, you know what? It is genuinely a coin flip. Like, am I going to put Jonnu Smith on my list and not put Hunter Henry? Am I going to put Hunter Henry on my list and not put Jonnu Smith? Either of them could be the key, the number one guy. And I think people are leaning towards Jonnu Smith. I actually, in the past game, would lean towards Hunter Henry. I think they're going to use Jonnu Smith.
Me too, I think. Yeah.
So, I mean, especially if Hunter Henry stays healthy. But really, it comes down to either one of those guys. And that's why I put a tight end, because I couldn't just put one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. So that leads me into my number two, correct?
Well, I also wanted to mention while we were doing it that Justin said a tight end better be on the list. And a tight end was on the list, just happened to be exactly.
A tight end, yeah.
I had a good point. Colin, you go ahead with your number. Did you have a tight end on your list, by the way? I don't know if we talked about that at all.
See, I didn't, just because I couldn't differentiate between the two of them. But I think, obviously, like you said, the position as a whole is very important. But I had a few more specific names in mind.
And we see It's Gear and our Cyber Sports saying what's up in the chat. Welcome again, guys. And I'll mention again here, it says it below on the ticker, but if you guys drop some questions in the chat, we will get to them right at the end after we finish going through the top five Patriots. And we'll talk about some of the other guys, some of the other things you guys have mentioned in the chat as well. And anyway, we'll get into that after we list off our top five. So far, just to recap, Colin, recap your number 5, 4, and 3 so far.
So I went J.C. Jackson, then I went Matt Judon, and my number 3 was Damian Harris, which KJ sniped from me.
Right. Well, and then I have number 5 as Christian Barrymore, 4 as Damian Harris, and 3 as a tight end. So anyway, now we're getting into our top two. So this is key territory. Colin, you go ahead. Who's your number 2?
So my number 2, kind of segueing off of the tight ends, you talked about how important it was to have a tight end to make an impact in the passing game because of kind of the, you know, not so steady receiving core. There's one name in the receiving core that I think is by far the most important. He's the one who was on the team last year. It's Jacoby Myers. And Jacoby Myers is a recurring guest on this little segment that me and KJ like to do. I remember Jacoby Myers was a few months fresh out of NC State. And KJ was already squeaking him onto his list.
Did I do that?
I think you did. You will have to go back to the archives.
Let it be known. I knew Jacoby Myers was going to be fourth.
So look, he's the type of receiver that you can't necessarily label him as like a true number one because he just doesn't fit that physical mold, nor is that really the game that he plays. But his production, it's almost like, I'm not comparing him to Julian Edelman, but think back to Julian Edelman. Julian Edelman was always our number one receiver production-wise. Like, he was our guy. He was our best receiver. But he didn't necessarily play that, you know, outside big-time receiver role. So, I'm looking for Jacoby Myers to be that. Obviously, Mac has the tight ends, but be that safety blanket for a rookie quarterback. Jacoby Myers is that perfect intermediate, you know, in between the hash marks type receiver where he can, you know, just be literally, I can't think of a better way to put it than just be there for Mac. And you know, he's a good possession receiver, can rack up receptions. Like, I'll put it on tape right here. I think he could catch 90 balls. Like, I legitimately do. I don't think either of these other receivers, Aguilar, will he have 3 big plays probably where Mac drops in a nice deep ball and everyone, oh, Nelson Aguilar. Yeah, I'm sure. And he'll help, but I don't have really any faith in Aguilar, or I have a little bit more faith in Bourne, but I don't really have much faith in either of them to be a steady, steady option. And look, Jacoby Myers was a pretty steady option there for Cam Newton and, you know, a little taste of Brian or whoever was playing quarterback last year. So I think if he can continue to take steps in the right direction, he's already come such a long way. Like, to have a productive receiver that was undrafted like that, it's really not that common. So for him to continue to develop, and like I said, I legitimately don't think 90 balls, 90 receptions is out of the question. I think that's how important he is, and that's how much they're going to rely on him based on how I look at this receiving depth chart.
Well, look, and I want to look this up real quickly, but I don't agree with you. I don't disagree with you, I should say, it at all. Jacoby Myers was someone I certainly thought about, but I think that receivers are going to be so devalued in this offense that it might not matter. But I will say that, you know, I think Mac Jones is a better thrower of the football than Cam Newton. I think that's pretty clear. And with Cam Newton last year, Joey Meyers had 59 receptions, and a large portion of those came in the back half of the year. I think since it was, you know, because he didn't play for, you know, or didn't really get much action for the first 5 weeks. I think he might have been injured in there as well. So in really the last 11 games of the season, he had 58 of those receptions. So I think that, you know, if you expect him to be an integral part of the offense all season, if you expect him to be in there and contributing, and, you know, obviously he had to prove himself a little bit more last season before they gave him that leash, and you expect him to have a better quarterback, and you're expecting a little bit of development from him from 1 year to the next, you know, not to mention with coming from a COVID year to a full training camp, everything like that, absolutely. Like, absolutely he could catch 90-plus passes. So I totally agree with you. I think if I had to pick one player, if you gun to my head, who's the best receiver in this option offense, as good as I think Nelson Agholor could be and has some talent there, some speed, and it's great, and Kendrick Bourne, they must really like, Broughton has potential. Both those guys, you know, might slot in ahead of him in the depth chart. I would pick Joey Meyers. I really think that he just has so many qualities that you love in a receiver. So it wasn't necessarily on my list, but I absolutely see where you were coming from. And I think that, you know, he could be the most important receiver in this offense, no question. He could lead the team in receptions, which is going to be extremely valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, and like I said, you're for sure correct that receivers are devalued in this offense. Like, that, I would say it's by far and away the third option. It'll be the running game, it'll be the tight ends, and that'll be the receivers. But I think he specifically just had, you know, third downs when you need, you know, you need an option. I think he's the type of guy who can be consistent, be reliable. And like I said, I'm not going to compare him. I can't compare anyone to Edelman, but I think he'll kind of play that role to an extent where they're going to run him across the middle on third and six and, you know, hope he can go make a play and take a hit. So I like Meyers a lot this year. We'll see if he backs it up for me.
And I do want to mention something someone said in the chat real quick as we're running through these, saying the key to the Patriots season is the top three defense, top three in rushing yards for running backs. Okay, that's top three might be a little off. Yeah, I'll put it at top five or six. But the tight ends one is what I want to talk about because we just talked about the tight ends before we talked about your guy there, Joey Meyers. So, or my guy too, I guess. But
our guy.
But Henry and Smith combining for 1,600 yards and 12 touchdowns. What do you think of that? I mean, that's a little lofty too, no?
Yeah, and I mean, it's tough. Like, look, Jonnu Smith last year, just under 450 yards. So, I mean, look, can he be better than that? For sure. And obviously, Hunter Henry, a good tight end too, a good receiving tight end. But I would have to at least assume, and I know this isn't, you know, necessarily the right thing to do, but I don't, has Hunter Henry played 16, 17 games in his career? Like, he seems to always at least miss a few. So I think I would temper the expectations down a little bit, but, like, right, you know, I you look for Jonnu to build on that 450 yards. Yeah, no, you can have high expectations, but
I'll give him, by the way, one caveat. He did say the key to the Patriots going 13-4.
Right. So
if you want the Patriots going 13-4, then
yeah, he's not saying he necessarily believes this is what's going to happen. He's saying this is what we need to happen.
Nor even what needs to happen for them to be good. Like, if you want to be 13-4, like, yeah, this stuff is probably going to need to happen. But I think that, you know, the more likely thing, probably 11-6. And I think more realistic expectations. Top three defense, I think, is a somewhat realistic expectation with the unit they have. Mm-hmm. Top three rushing yards, I would say top five, maybe might be a more attainable goal, top six. And then for the tight ends, you know, 1,600 is a lot. I would say, like, honestly, and this is going to sound low, but like 1,000.
Yeah, they combined for about 1,000 last year, a little over 1,000. Yeah.
The touchdowns is roughly fine. I think you're talking 10, 11, 12 is what you're looking for. So right, if you can get roughly that production. And by the way, if you want to say Henry and Smith, I'll tell you what, throw Asiasi in there too. Throw Devin Asiasi in that group because I think you might have some injury problems in there. And he might slot into the number two tight end. And if that happens, I don't expect them to go away from their two tight end sets. I expect them to throw Asiasi in there and then say, let's keep rolling. And I expect him to be a key part of that offense when they have someone out, one of those guys out. Even maybe they might throw some three tight end looks out there with Asiasi and roll with all three of those guys, like we've seen the Ravens do and other teams do. I think the Browns did it a lot of times last year when they had three good tight ends. And the idea there is perfect to me because guess what happens? You have three tight ends, you have a running back, and you have a receiver. And now teams really don't know if you're throwing or passing. Like, you want to talk about the play action game being a benefit to your team, if you have all three of those guys out there, then that's a problem. So if you want to bump that up for Asiasi, I think realistic expectations for Asiasi this season could be, depending on injuries, 200 to 400 yards, couple of touchdowns like that. I think he could be a big part of the offense too. So don't cut that out. And if you want to group him in there, you know, I'm not saying your yards become super realistic, but it becomes somewhat more realistic. So anyway, just wanted to caveat touch on that. We got three more players to run through, and then we'll get to more of the questions in the chat. My number two, and I'm really curious to hear who your number one is, but I'll give my number two first. I hope it's not the same person.
Me too.
We'll live with it. My number one, and you mentioned J.C. Jackson earlier, and you had J.C. Jackson.
Wait, is this your two or one?
This is my number two.
Okay, cool.
You had J.C. Jackson as your number five, and I mentioned, hey, you know what? That's great, but I got to go with someone else's position. And it's got to be Stephon Gilmore for a litany of reasons, so many reasons. One, he we're waiting for him to return from this injury. He's going to be out the first 6 weeks. So how does that cornerback group look in the first 6 weeks? I think right now, without Stephon Gilmore, that is one of only two position groups I look at on your entire team where I say that's a weakness. It's receiver and corner. And that's it. So if you don't get him back and you're forced to put these players out there, it becomes what we saw in 2012 when you have Kyle Arrington as your second corner and you say, this just isn't working. You know, it's never going to work. So to me, they really need Gilmore to come back. And not only that, not only do they need him to be on the field, they need him to be good. Stephon Gilmore is getting a little older and he's coming off a big injury. If this is the time where he's going to fall off, that's going to be a big problem for them. Like, you can't afford Stephon Gilmore to decline at all this year. So to me, Stephon Gilmore, because of the injuries, because he's on PUP right now, because of the position group, because of his contract, because of his age, because of the potential for decline, easily I have to pick him as the second most important player on this team. Second most important player on this team, obviously excluding quarterback.
Yeah, look, everything you said backs up the fact that he is and belongs as, you know, a top three most important player on this team. I'm just worried about the whole thing a little bit. I think at this point he is going to play for us, right? Like, I think if he was going to hold out or whatever, would we have heard about it by now? Right? Like, you think we would have, but we never know what goes on inside that building. So.
Right. I mean, look, is he injured right now? Maybe, probably.
Yeah.
He's on PUP.
But how, like, you could get into the conversation of, like, is this a bias time or is he actually need more time for the injury? You know what I mean? Like, which I'm not saying that's necessarily true. I'm just saying that's a conversation that people will probably have. So, yeah, it just adds a wrinkle to the whole situation. You know, like, there's a lot going on there. And he, you know, go back to what I said. Could Matt Judon potentially be the most productive or best player on your team this year? The best player on your team right now is Stephon Gilmore. And someone has to take that throne from him. So
honestly, I'm not going to say that. I think Stephon Gilmore has to go out there and reprove it because of all the reasons, the injuries and the age and everything.
Fair.
And I haven't seen him be, you know, of course he gets injured midway through last season. So I need you to go back out there and prove it to me, Stephon Gilmore.
No,
right,
you're
now,
right.
I wouldn't say that. Right now, I would not say he's the best player on your team. I would.
Right. No, and that's why I said I think Judon could be, because there's obviously a huge opportunity with all, like you said, all the stuff surrounding Gilmore. So it's, you know, like I said, it's a really complicated situation, and with an injury and a contract going into it, who knows when we'll see him.
So you just to clarify, you did not have Gilmore on your list. Is that correct?
No.
Now I'm guessing the reason you don't is because you're just not even sure he's going to be on the Patriots. So how can he be the second most important Patriots player on the Patriots if you're not out there? Is that why you didn't put him on there?
Yeah, no, I didn't put him on there because he's like I said, he's missing 6 weeks. That's kind of why I slotted in J.C. Jackson ahead of him, because I thought right off the bat there's going to when you come off a season like last year, there's going to be a heck of a lot you find out about yourself in the first 6 weeks. And right. Stephon Gilmore is not going to be there to build the identity of the team in those first 6 weeks. And like I said, I think he's the type of player that you can just drop right back in there and he'll still play at a relatively high level, whether it's as high as we've seen him play or not. Like you said, he is getting a little bit older. But yeah, no, I think it's fair for you to put him there. I personally didn't put him there because he's not going to be there right off the rip. And I chose the guy who could replace him this year and maybe could replace him in the future. Don't know.
Right. And maybe that's the Patriots' plan, by the way. You don't pay Gilmore or J.C. Jackson now so that you can flip it next year and give all that money to J.C. Jackson and let Gilmore walk out the door.
Right. You literally never know what they're thinking.
Right. So I will say this. The reason that I had Gilmore on there just to defend it even more is because I took this as most important player on your roster at all. And
no, right. Yeah. You don't have to defend it.
I understand that. But I'm just clarifying too here that if Stephon Gilmore isn't playing for you, that is important. That is like going to be an important note. So I think that the fact of whether he's on the field or not hugely important to this Patriots season. So that's also why I had him at two. But now we're to our number ones, and I see some of you guys dropping the chat. I'll give Mike his shine a little bit here. His top five: Dante Hightower, who both of us didn't mention. Maybe we'll get to that in a little bit later after our top fives. Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry over Jonnu Smith. So Matt Judon, Hunter Henry, J.C. Jackson, his number two, of course, your number five, and Damian Harris, my four, your three, his one. So very interesting. Of course, he also said that thinks the Patriots need to be top three in rushing yards. So that falls on the shoulders of Damian Harris. All right. Well, our list, again, just to recap, Colin, you had J.C. Jackson. You had Harris at three.
Matt Judon at four.
Right. Of course. How could I forget? So J.C. Jackson, Matt Judon, Damian Harris.
And Jacoby
Myers at two.
Yeah.
And I had Christian Barrymore, Damian Harris, a tight end, Henry/Smith, Stephon Gilmore at two. Now we're both to our number ones. And I don't think we picked the same guy. So who is your number one guy?
I don't think we picked the same guy either based on your reaction to one of the comments in the chat. This was a no-brainer for me personally. I'm a little biased. He's my favorite Patriot player of all time, not named Tom Brady. But for me, it's Dante Hightower. Look, you had a massive hole in your defense, the heart and soul of your defense, the defensive play caller, your leader emotionally and, you know, scheme-wise. Look, I don't think Juwan Bentley is a bad player, but thrusting him into – yeah, right, right – him and Terrence Hall and these guys into that role was.
Say this, Colin. I don't think he's a good player. Is
it? Yeah, he's just a linebacker. We'll call it that. But I think, look, Dante is getting older, and you know, obviously that's tough. He's 31 years old. We've seen some middle linebackers have great impact, you know, late into their careers. Look at Thomas Davis, guys like that. And we've also seen middle linebackers hang him up at age 29. The fact that Dante came out of this little over one year break, when you actually boil it all down, and came back to the team, and they're saying all the stuff they're saying, that he's, you know, he hasn't missed a beat and he's still the lead. Like, that is so important. And I don't think it can be understated how good of a player he is, but I think it's almost more important that they have like their guy back, their leader back, the heart and soul. He's going to be the mic. Like, he's going to be, you know, calling the shots out there. I think everyone will kind of fall back into a little bit more of a place of comfort. You know, probably makes Devin McCourty's life just that much easier. Probably makes J.C. Jackson, if Gilmore's out there, like those guys, that's their guy. We won titles with him calling the shots. So I feel like that can't be, you know, just you have to take that into consideration. Whether he'll be, you know, the same Dante Hightower physically, that is another reason why I think this is so important, because despite the fact they're really deep at linebacker, I still think having him in that, you know, middle linebacker position is just something you can rely on. You know, he's going to be there, you know, he's going to make plays and make the people around him better. So I think he's the most important player on the team. He's your one of your captains, and I'll live and die with that guy.
So before I say what I think of the Dante Hightower pick, because it's going to transition right into my number one. Well, who do you think my number one is, if you had to guess?
I don't think
you're going to guess it.
Yeah, no, honestly, man, like I was trying to place it as we went along. Like, I really don't think I know. I mean, like, I'll throw out a couple other names I thought of that could have been, like, when you said something about corner or secondary, I was like, is he going to go like Adrian Phillips on? Is he going to go Jalen Mills? Like,
Kyle Duggar? Am I going to go offensive line even?
I did think about a few guys up front on the O-line too. Let's see what you got. Then we'll do some honorable mentions.
So there's a reason that you're having a tough time guessing who it is, because I cheated this year. I did something that We don't usually do it. It's, don't worry, it's not Mac Jones.
No, no.
I did something we don't usually do, and you'll see what that is in a second. But as far as Dont'a Hightower is concerned, I thought about Dont'a Hightower. I briefly thought, I was like, do I want to have Dont'a Hightower on my list? And I said, you know, the Patriots are so weak at linebacker. They were so weak at linebacker last year. And they have Hightower, and, you know, he's getting a little bit older. I don't know how effective he's going to be. And I think that's why maybe I was hesitant to put him. But I thought about it because I said, you know what? They really need this help at linebacker. They need someone to be the leader of that defense. And that's why my number one is Matthew Judon, who, as you may have noticed, I was hesitant to talk about before when you said him as number four, because I wanted to have this moment with Matthew Judon. He is the most important player on the Patriots. Not only that, Matthew Judon, as you mentioned before, and you stole my thunder, he's the best player on the Patriots. Matthew Judon right now is probably the best player on the Patriots. I mean, all the reports we heard out of camp, all the reports, all things we've seen of him, he looks like a monster. Like, he really looks incredible. And I liken this to the Stephon Gilmore signing a few years ago, which, when the Patriots went out and signed Stephon Gilmore, they paid big money for Gilmore. And you thought, the Patriots don't spend like that. And they paid it for a guy who was on arrival, who Gilmore was good. He was really good. Top 10 corner in the league. But he wasn't the best corner in the league. Wasn't the second best corner in the league until they brought him in. I think Matthew Judon could be the same story. That they go out, they sign Matthew Judon. He's a guy that you look at, pretty good pass rusher. Wouldn't put him near the top of the league, probably. Pretty good linebacker. Wouldn't put him near the top of the league. But when he comes to New England and they target him, Bill Belichick says, I have all this money to spend, and that's my first target, is Matt Judon. That's a statement. You're telling the NFL something. You're telling the NFL that, as Bill Belichick, of all the guys, and we all know Bill Belichick in terms of his scouting and how he does it, he's better at scouting NFL players than he is college players. When he brings in Wes Welker, when he brings in Stephon Gilmore, when he brings in someone like that, you better watch out. So the fact that he went out there and said, I don't care what it costs, I'm bringing in Matthew Judon onto my team, and what he said so far, what he's done so far, everything like that, it just tells me that Matt Judon should be incredible in New England. And you mentioned they've had some slip-ups in the past that can't happen again this time around with Judon. You compared it to Thomas. I just think his attitude is so much different than Adalius Thomas.
No, I wasn't comparing him to Adalius Thomas. I was just saying we can't have something like that happen again.
Right. And by the way, his players, not too dissimilar. Like, they are. But the mindset to me is, like, flipped. And so the fact that they did everything they did to bring in Judon, to me, like, it's I just think – I look at him and I say, this is the guy that could, as much as – and again, we're not including Mac Jones. So besides Mac Jones, this is – if Mac Jones is the savior of your offense, this guy could be the savior of your defense.
Right. Let me ask you something. When the Judon thing went down, did you expect it at all? Because I felt like, oh, my God, overwhelmed just with shock. Like, you know, the tight ends people had talked about, oh, could they go after this guy, whatever. I had no clue that one was coming. When I first heard the rumblings and then it was like 20 minutes later, it was official. I literally couldn't believe it.
So I didn't expect it, and I wasn't all too that excited about it. I thought, you know, Matt Judon, I paid big money for him. Okay, let's see what he does. But as training camp went along and as preseason went along, I said, oh, this is why.
Mm.
This is why they brought in Matt Judon. And then it all started to make sense. My brain started turning, and it all started to fall into place that to compare it to the Gilmore signing and that where their place in the league is and wanting to elevate him and wanting to pay a guy that top of the market contract. Like, and by the way, there's a lot of pass rushers that they didn't pay. Like, they didn't want to pay Chandler Jones's contract. And Chandler
Right, because I think Judon brings a little bit more to the table. Like,
right. And by the way, when Chandler Jones left New England, like, he was great for the Cardinals. I mean, the Cardinals got to be so happy they got.
Yeah, he was top two in the league in sacks multiple times.
Exactly. And the Patriots said, no, we wouldn't give that money to Chandler Jones, but we'll give that money to Matt Judon. When I start to think about what Matt Judon can do here, it's exciting. It is so exciting. And so you mentioned earlier, you said it, I don't think Stephon Gilmore is the best player on your team anymore. I think it's Matthew Judon. And they need him, quite frankly, to be a dominant defensive player if they're going to have a dominant defense. because when you look across their defense, I think the defensive line is strong. I think their linebacker group is strong. I think their safeties are strong. Corners, if they get Gilmore back, definitely a strength. But when you talk about elite players in the NFL, elite defensive players, all the ones they have are kind of long in the tooth, and you got to be worried about it. Whether it's McCourty, whether it's Hightower, whether it's, you know, even Lawrence Guy, if you want to throw him on the list, Gilmore, all those guys are getting pretty old. So J.C. Jackson's the only youngish one you have that you'd say, you know, he was in the NFL top 50, so he's, you know, he's young and he, you know, was highly regarded by his peers, so, you know, you give him credit there. But do you have, like, a guy that can be insanely good? And I hope that that's Matthew Judon. And I think a lot of signs point to the fact that it's going to be.
Yeah, you did surprise me, I think, but it was because you tried to play it off a little bit when I mentioned him as my number four.
Right, and that's how I was too. Usually, if you mention someone or I mention someone that we have on our list, we say, oh, yeah, that guy was number this.
From yeah, no, I respect it, though. He was your 1-1.
You're number one. Yeah. I gotta let me have my moment, my number one. I mean, well, yeah, he was
if I knew,
okay, let me go down to two. Like, no, I got to have my moment of who the most important player on the Patriots is.
No, I think you still got your. I think you still got your moment. I think the people.
Yeah, right. I did. all right, before we get out of here, if you want to drop some of your most important players in the chat, go ahead and do it, and we'll get through those really quickly. Going all the way back to the top, Zach's number one, Nordine/Folk. So, I will say it's obviously she's joking a little bit, but I want to talk about this because Nordine is someone that we mentioned before the show. I think we even jokingly said it to ourselves that hey, Quinn Nordine, where does he fall on the list? But it's going to be important because last year, and I don't think Nick Folk's going to be involved, but last year, Nick Folk, you couldn't kick a 47, 46-yard field goal with him. They wouldn't do it. You remember this? They
oh, yeah.
The 30-yard line, the 29-yard line, and we both say we'd watch in the game, and I know we both say, oh, they're in field goal range. Nope. And
they're not.
And they'd go for it on fourth down. Sometimes they'd punt when you didn't think they should punt, and you'd say, how do we not have a kicker that can kick a 50-yard field goal? Like, you can't even throw them out there to try it. So Quinn Nordine has a leg. He has a hammer for a leg. So that's exciting. But can he hit the football in the ocean? Like that's
yeah. I was just gonna say we changed the guy who couldn't kick the ball 50 yards for one who could kick it 65, but just sideways.
Right. Exactly. So I mean, to me, yeah, Nordine was probably the right call because if it's between Nordine and Folk, like you can't afford to not even have the threat of a 50-yard field goal.
Also, I think so. I think there's a chance how bad the kickers are in the league. I think there's a chance someone takes a flyer on Nordine if they cut him. And I think at least like they knew Folk, no one's looking to be, you know, capped at 45-yard field goals really in the league right now. So they knew they could slip Folk to the practice squad. So I wouldn't be surprised.
And last year, this was part of why their offense struggled is because they didn't have a field goal game.
Yeah, you can't lose points in the field. You can't.
Right. And so if you're going to be a running team, you're going to have situations where you get stuffed three times in a row. It's just going to happen.
Right.
And you're going to have to settle for field goals. And Nordine's got to hit him. Like, you can't afford to have him be a 60% field goal kicker and then all of a sudden you can't score points again. And
no, if that's the case, we'll be seeing Nick Folk kick 38-yarders again.
Right. You know what I wonder? I half wonder this. And he said Folk/Nordine. They still have the thing where you can elevate players to game day roster on game day from the practice squad. So what if they bring it? What if they call up Folk a couple times? And when it's like 35 yards, 36 yards to like, you know, in.
Now you're speaking my language.
And when it's like 40 yards or further, that's when they bring in Nordine.
Folk gets all extra points and sub 40-yard kicks. Nordine gets everything else.
That would be crazy, and I honestly think it's a bad idea because ultimately, if the plan is for Nordine to get rid of the shakes, then that's not helping his confidence.
But can we be honest, KJ? We're both Michigan football fans. He's had the shakes. The shakes haven't gone away for Quinn Nordine.
I understand that, but the idea is – a lot of kicking is confidence.
Right. And oh, yeah.
The fact that you gave him the starting job, like, that's a confidence boost.
Yeah, so and the quote, do you see the thing he just showed up? Like, he didn't even, no one told him if he made the team, he just showed up.
I saw that. Yeah, he just said, you know, nobody told me I did or didn't, so I showed up. But here's the thing. If you tell Quinn Nordine, hey, you're just kicking 50s for us, kid. I don't trust him to kick 50s if that's all he's doing.
Yeah,
like,
right.
Then, like,
right.
Then it's like, yeah, you suck at every other point. And by the way, I mean, they talk about practicing kicking and, you know, oh, give him a chip shot to get him back in a rhythm. If you're just kicking bombs, like, that's going to be – you're not in a rhythm. It might
right.
be a problem.
And you'll see the ball go through the field goal post, what maybe once a week, not even, right. every other week for a 50-yarder? Right.
So pretty much I think your plan has to be with Quinn Nordin to ride with him and hope that you can coach him up, you can get rid of the shakes, you can get him to be more accurate, whatever it may be. And that's pretty much all it comes down to.
Right.
We got to run through these. Let's see. We're going to go, you know, lightning round real quick. Is there a sleeper? Are they a sleeper team or a favorite, the Patriots? I think that they're definitely not a favorite. It's got to be somewhere in between. Because right now, they're not favored to make the playoffs in Vegas. If you go to their odds, they have better odds to miss the playoffs than make them. So
can I say one thing about this?
What were you saying, Colin?
I said, can I say one thing about this? This to me, and maybe I'm making this up in my head, but I feel like, and you're seeing it, like I just saw Stephen A. put the Patriots at number 5 as a Super Bowl contender. Yeah. I think there's this, you know, idea that if people like put the page or say the Patriots are going to do good, at least like when they do well, they can say like, oh, I knew it. Like, I think they're so afraid of all the times. And I know this is more of a fan take than an actual like analyst take, but I think people are so afraid of all the times that we've been ranked 8th or whatever and come all the way up to the top and taken, you know, the Super Bowl or gone to the Super Bowl, that now they're so afraid that they're just like, we're going to start seeing people be like, oh, but don't sleep on the Patriots. Oh, don't sleep on the Patriots. Just so people can say they did. I that's my personal opinion. Like I said, that's more of a fan take, but at the end of the day, what am I really? I'm a fan, so.
I think it's just a narrative thing. Like, it feels like a new day. They spent all this money, and it's like, guys, Vegas actually has money riding on this, and they don't think they're a playoff team. So
yeah, no. Do you?
I think they will be probably, but I want to like throw some caution to the wind here and just say, hey, everybody, you gotta watch out a little bit here. Okay, this isn't a juggernaut. I don't know. We'll see ultimately. All right, and Justin, of course, and Tynan better be on this list, and we of course did have them. Zach saying Trent Brown and O lineman that's always hurt. Forgot his name. Isaiah Wynn is what I'm probably thinking of. I will say that I thought about Trent Brown because Isaiah Wynn
could
get hurt and he could have to be a swing tackle. So that was a guy I thought of putting on the list and certainly could be important. I mean, they're still paying him a lot of money because they traded him from the Raiders. I know the Raiders might have had to take some of the signing bonus or however the contract machinations were.
He really thrived here, though. Like, he really thrived. That's how he got that dumb contract.
$11 million? Is that what it is? If I remember right.
I think that's what we have him for. I think he was or is guaranteed a lot more than that.
Right. So
that Raiders contract was one of the richest an O-lineman has gotten.
Right, and by the way, like, not to mention, he's going to be protecting your rookie quarterback. So that's going to be important. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get down to – I got to skip all the comments telling me that they couldn't hear me for 5 minutes, which is unfortunate. But Isgear saying, thoughts on Kendrick Bourne. You know, I don't know how you feel about this, but I Kendrick Bourne is so perplexing to me because he was okay. He was okay with San Francisco. He was a fine receiver. But – when you really need receivers to go out there and make him your main target and immediately slot him as in your number two is your number three or whatever it's going to be, like, I don't know that he's that good. And I don't envision him making strong, like, strides with the Patriots. I think he'll be okay. I think he's probably going to be just okay. He'll probably be what LaFell was for you at times.
Right.
I think I can see him kind of having the Demir Bird type role times, Philip Dorsett. Like, he's just going to be a kind of a guy. He'll probably have some really good games where we say, hey, that was really impressive. I really like Kendrick Bourne. And then he'll disappear for 5 games. Like, that's kind of what I see Kendrick Bourne being.
Yeah. And it's kind of what he was as a 49er. So we'll see. I guess if I could give one word, I would just say upside. Like, he's a guy who hasn't really maybe performed that great at any point in his career from a production standpoint, but shows like some flashes of being a pretty shifty, athletic, impressive receiver. So we'll see if we can tap into the upside, I guess.
Mike saying, not much to say about this one, but I'll pop it up. Mac will be fine, limit mistakes and interceptions, and the rest of the team will carry it. I think a lot of people think that's how the season's going to go, pretty much. I think, you know,
didn't throw it in the preseason. No interceptions in the preseason.
the hope is that you have enough around Mac Jones with the defense, the offensive line, and the running backs that he doesn't need to do much. And right. That's, so, I mean, yeah, that'll be the hope for them. And I mean, I've heard people saying this, and I mean, I made these comparisons. I forget even where I made them now. I think it was actually on Jake Elmsley. Shout out to Jake Elmsley. I went on his show, and he asked me, who would you compare Mac Jones to? And I immediately looked at quarterbacks that fell into good situations. So Dak Prescott was one he brought up, and I thought of as well. Dak Prescott jumping into the Dallas situation, which comparable in terms of the O-line, you know, jumping into a team with that could have been a line. Like, I think that's comparable for Mac Jones. Justin Herbert, I think, is another comparison. Just the fact that he's getting Hunter Henry, he's getting a team 1 year removed from the playoffs. A lot of comparables there. But I think the two big ones, if you're hoping the Patriots are going to see a lot of success with him as a rookie, are Ben Roethlisberger and Mark Sanchez. Like, both of those guys, just kind of guys, like, they didn't need to do much their rookie seasons because they were on wagons. They had so much talent around them.
Right.
The Jets, do you know the Jets that year? Number one in rushing yards, number one in defense. Both. Number one. Like, no one else better than them in either. So, like, I think that's too much to ask of the Patriots, but that's generally the idea that you insulate a rookie quarterback and you don't ask him to make too many mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we'll get into Zach, another comment from Zach. Over-under throws 25 times week one. Again, blowing through these. You're going to go under. I think I'll say under as well. Like, you know, we saw
just under.
Against the Dolphins last year, they ran the ball a lot. It was a big Cam Newton rushing game. Things look good. One of the few good Cam Newton games. So they're probably going to run a lot on the Dolphins.
Yeah. Get his feet wet a little bit. Don't throw him right into the deep end.
Run it right at Adam Butler. Adam Butler. Good pass rusher as a deep
Adam player. Butler, another darling of this segment. We enjoy
it. Well, yeah, you got to run it right into him. David Andrews maybe being important. Sure, his return is going to be important, but they have set good center depth, so I don't really see it being overly important, you know?
Right.
Feeling Adrian Phillips could have a good season, possibly.
Yeah, see, that's why I mentioned him. He was one of my honorable mentions. Just real quick, I think you look at a guy, again, it comes back to versatility. You can play multiple positions. They'll have him play some, like, sub-down linebacker and stuff like that. Like, he was relatively impressive last year, I thought, in a otherwise not really impressive unit. But, yeah, I think his versatility, I think he'll be used a lot. And he's another guy you can just chip in the secondary, with your best player in the secondary missing at least the first 6 weeks. Obviously, Phillip's not a cornerback, but he's just another versatile player that they can use in different packages out there to get things done. So I like him. I think he'll have a lot of tackles, but we'll see what Duggar does too. Don't forget about Duggar.
Yeah, Duggar, I see hopefully taking the reins of that role, but we'll see. Adrian Phillips forced to play a lot of linebacker last season because they didn't have Hightower and they didn't have Judon yet and all these guys. So I think that's going to be something that, and of course, as it's you're saying, Uche too, you know, they're going to be a lot better linebacker. And Uche was there, but he progressed.
A lot of people are really high on Uche. Like, I've seen Louis Riddick going out of his way to talk about how good he thinks Uche is going to be. And I mean, that's exciting stuff. Like, if you can hit on another one of these third round guys, look, everyone talks about how Bill can't draft, whatever, man. He's hit on enough third and fourth round guys and stuff like that, even undrafted guys that at least make up for some of the pain of some of the bad first rounders over the years.
And Zach, I see a lot of comments from you. I'm not even sure what we were talking about at the time, saying he's ranked number one in high school. Crazy season for fans. Maybe this was Nordine. I think this has to be Nordine because crazy season for fans, I'd assume he means crazy season because the kicker's going to be shanking some kicks into the.
Yeah, well, don't you love that the sleepover guy story has stuck with Quinn Nordine? Like, before he showed up at Michigan, Jim Harbaugh using an overnight visit, having a sleepover with Quinn Nordine. I saw some Patriots fans calling him sleepover boy on Twitter, and I was absolutely loving it.
I think he was saying terrible idea with Folk and Nordine. I mean, I don't love it either, but hey, it could work. And last thing we'll say before we get out of here, Zach saying, who throws the most interceptions in the division? I mean, it's got to be Tua, right? Miami has no running game.
Yeah, but low-key, don't sleep on Zach. And don't get me wrong. I said before the Jets got him, and I'll stick with it. I really like Zach Wilson. His ability to throw the ball and the move is crazy. But I think he's one of these rookie quarterbacks who is a little bit of a gunslinger in college. It's going to take a few multi-interception games to learn that you can't quite do that at the professional level. So I would say Zach Wilson and Tua will be in an INT off, but I don't think Mac Jones will be in the conversation. One, I don't think they're going to put him in that many situations like that. And two, like, I think he proved that he's at least smart enough. You know, interceptions will happen at times, but I think he proved he's smart enough to not walk his way into interceptions by not having any in the preseason.
I suppose so. You know, I don't think it's going to be Josh Allen. Surprisingly, Josh Allen, not a lot of interceptions.
No, he'll probably have the least.
Right, and Mac Jones, I don't think will be – I mean, I think you're a little higher on Josh Allen still than I am. I want to see one more year of him being great before I anoint him totally. But Mac Jones, I think you're right. They won't put him in too many situations where he's going to be throwing the ball a ton. But with Tua and some of since Zach Wilson, I just think the Jets are going to insulate the rookie quarterback a little bit. They're not going to force him to do too much, even if they
– Yeah, no, Zach Wilson, I think, is my pick.
Well, I think they'll just run it into the line. Like, I don't think they're going to put Zach Wilson.
But like I was just saying, he was a gunslinger in college a little bit.
I know, so I just think they're going to handle him with kid gloves a little bit. Like, I don't think they're going to put him in that situation either. I think Tua, second year, you're handing him the reins. You're expected to win is the thing. The Jets aren't expected to win. So if you know, push comes to shove, I think they'll probably just accept, hey, we're losing. Like,
and they don't have Fitzmagic to come in and throw the ball 20 times in the second half anymore.
Right. So I think what's going to happen is Tua, they're going to have Tua. He doesn't have a running game, and he's going to be asked to throw the ball a ton because he has these receivers now. He has Will Fuller and Devontae Parker and, you know, Jalen Waddle and all these guys. So you're expected to throw. You're expected to be a passing team. You got Mike Gesicki, and he threw a lot of picks in training camp and preseason, man. Like, you hear that day he had, like, five in the training camp, in the, like, joint practices or something? Like, oh. So I think if I had to pick someone, it's probably going to be Tua if I had to put a name out there. Anyway, that's where we'll end it. Colin, I know you got to run. Thank you so much for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me, KJ. I hope to catch back up with you during the season at some point. Talk to all you guys out there again soon. And, you know, I always love talking Patriots. So hopefully we get off to a good start here this weekend.
If you can, Colin, we'll have you on one of the pregame shows. As I said, guys, we are doing pregame shows every Sunday as long as I can. I might miss week 4 because I might be at that game. I might try to pop on, maybe work something out, have someone else as the host. You know, I'll discuss it with somebody maybe and then have them as the host. And then maybe I just kind of live come in from my phone or something. If I can, we'll see. We'll try to work something out potentially. But anyway, thank you guys for watching. Subscribe to the channel. All the good stuff, all the outro stuff I should be doing, but I'm going to skip because Colin really needs to go. Thank you guys for watching. I'll catch you guys next time. And make sure you tune in for that post-game stream this Sunday because we will have one this Sunday.